Okay, so we are recording now. I would like to begin by acknowledging our sponsors. First of all, over the course of the year, Jake and Karen Abelevitz, in memory of of Jake's parents, Eliel Ben Abba and Leah Bas Avraham. In addition, today we have a specific sponsor, and that is Steve and Ethel Serber, Eloi Nishmas, in memory of Steve's mother, Chaya Tova Bas Moshe, on the occasion of her yard site. And I also want to mention Barbara's mother, who our learning on Monday night was also Eloi Nishmasa. It was a bit of an abbreviated shir, so we have an opportunity to learn again in memory of all these wonderful people whose impact on their family and all those who knew them, I'm sure, was significant and positive. Okay, so folks, we begin today Parshas Vayetze. If you noticed the topic of the shir that I posted was a kiss is just a kiss. Or is it? I'm not exactly sure if that's how Louis Armstrong sang it, but that's the question that I want to pose. A kiss is just a kiss, or is it? Specifically as it relates to what I believe is the only kiss in the Chumash between a man and a woman, and that is when Yaakov kisses Rachel. And this kiss, first of all, the fact that it's mentioned, I was talking about this with I think Rabbi Shaloni earlier today. So he said, I'm sure it's not the it's not the only kiss in the Chumash, but it's the only kiss which is mentioned. And I would suspect that is correct. So the question is, what's going on here? What is the significance of this kiss of Yaakov to Rachel? And this kiss has also generated quite a bit of controversy. The traditional Mefarshim and the Midrashim are not so at ease with the simple read of the Pasuk that Yaakov kissed Rachel, and this is a love story that is simply being recorded. And it is a passionate or romantic type of kiss. For some reason that, you know, that simple read of the Pesukim tends to generate, I don't know if a backlash is the right word, but at least a need for reinterpretation. So let's read the Pesukim together a little bit. I'd like to share a couple of sort of exegetical approaches, you know, standard Perushim. And then what I would like to do more broadly is to look at sort of a broad theme and to see this kiss in light of a bigger picture that was going on. So let's start with Vayetze. We are in Perek Chavtes. And let's start actually from the beginning of the when Yaakov shows up to the well. So this is Perek Chavtes. Vayisa Yaakov, chapter 29, pasuk 1. Vayisa Yaakov raglov, vayelach artza b'nei kedem. Yaakov went eastward. Vayar v'hine be'er basadeh. He saw a well in the field. V'hine sham shlosha edrei tzon rov tzimaleha. And there are three flocks of sheep. Ki min ha-be'er ha-hi yashku adarim. The shepherds are going to water their sheep from this well. V'ha-eben ha-gdola al pi ha-be'er. And there is a rock that is on top of this well that is covering it. V'nesfu shama kol ha'adarim v'galalu es ha'even me'al pi ha'be'er. He had these shepherds that gathered, and they were going to remove the rock from the top of the well, v'shku es ha'tzon, in order to water the sheep. V'shiv es ha'even al pi ha'be'er l'mkoma v'yomer lehem Yaakov achai me'ayin atem. So he says to these shepherds, where are you from? And they respond, we're from Charan. Say, oh, that's great. He's on the way to Charan. Vayomer lahem, hayidatem es Lavan ben Nachor. Do you know Lavan ben Nachor? That's who he wants to go meet in Charan. Vayomer yadanu, and they say, yes, we know him. Vayomer lahem shalom lo. He says, do you know how he's doing? Vayomer shalom, yeah, he's fine. Vihine Rachel bito, and actually his daughter Rachel is on her way with her sheep.
Hayomer hein od hayom gadol lo eis ha'asef ha'mikneh. And they said, the day, and he says, you know, the day is still large. In other words, it's still the middle of the day. This is not the time when the, you know, shepherds bring their sheep to the, you know, to the watering hole. That's the end of the day. So, and the day is still long. Hashkuat zona l'chura'u. You know, why don't you just get some water and, you know, go out and do what shepherds do. Let the animals graze and you can watch them. What are you doing here? Vayomru, and they said, well, lo nuchal ad asher yasfu kol adarim. We can't do anything right now because the stone is on top of the well, and we need, you know, more bodies to help us remove it. The galuas ha'evan me'al pi'a be'er. When everybody gathers, then we'll be able to remove the covering stone. Yishkinu atzon, and we'll water our sheep at that time. Odena medaber imam. He's in the midst of talking to them. Rachel ba'a im hatzon, and Rachel shows up with her sheep that belonged to her father, ki ro'ahi, for she was a shepherdess. And behold, when Yaakov saw Rachel Baslavan, his mother's brother, right? Rachel was the son, was the daughter of Lavan, and Lavan was Rivka's, Rachel was the daughter of Lavan, and Lavan was a sister of Rivka, the mother of Yaakov. Veston Lavan achi imo, and she came with her sheep. Also, their Lavan's sheep, actually. Vayigash Yaakov vayagalas avim me'al pi'a be'er. Yaakov stepped forward in an act of chivalry. He removes the covering stone. Vayashke tatzon Lavan achi imo, and he gave water to the sheep of Lavan, his mother's brother, his uncle. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, and then Yaakov kisses Rachel. Vayisa es kolo vayefk, and he cries. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel, and Yaakov says to Rachel, ki achi aviyahu. They're related. V'chi ben Rivkahu. He's the son of Rivka. He is the nephew of her father. Vataretz vataged la'aviyah. She runs and tells her father. Lavan hears about it. He goes and he embraces. He kisses him. He brings him home. And the story then proceeds. Okay, so I'd like to point out that this kissing pasuk over here seems to be problematic in a series of ways. First of all, it's like seems to be just out of the middle of nowhere. You know, he's there with the shepherds. He wants to. They're gonna water their sheep. He's talking to them. She shows up, and the first thing he does is he kisses her. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. I mean, that's not the first thing. The first thing is he sees her. And then after he sees her, he removes the well, and then there's no communication, there's no talking, there's no anything. He just plants a kiss on her. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. And then the pasuk says he begins to cry. So why does he begin to cry? What exactly is going on here? And then he introduces himself. Then he introduces himself. So this it could be that the reason that the traditional commentaries and the Midrashei Chazal are somewhat reticent to assume this to be a romantic kiss is it just, first of all, it seems very out of place. And second of all, the pasuk itself just doesn't seem to warrant it along the flow of the story here, and so there has to be some other significance to what's it would seem, or one would be pushed to think of some other significance that is for the presence of this pasuk. So how do we understand this pasuk? One possibility is it just is what it is. He saw her. This is, his father told him to go find a wife from his family. He saw her, and he realized, you know, this is the one. He kisses her. He cries. Maybe it's a sigh of relief. It's a You know, I mean, how do you understand this pasuk? Before we go any further, how do you understand it? Yeah, go ahead, Judy.
It mentions twice that she's a relative, that she's his cousin.
Yes, I think three times. Really, I think three times.
More than once.
Yeah.
More than once if necessary. So I think that's the relationship between that and the guest. Well, on a very superficial level, here's this guy who came to a strange place where he knows nobody, looking for a relative to find somebody he marries, and he realizes she's his link. There's no romance there yet, and there's a relief, and he kisses her. But okay, That's the most superficial, and I'm sure none of my freshmen saying that. But the fact that it says three times that she's a cousin is a thing.
Right. And actually, it's a very specific way of pointing out that she's a cousin. It says, Rachel bas Lavan achi imo, the daughter of Lavan, his mother's brother.
Right.
In other words, doesn't, I'm not sure there's another way to say it more, you know, more succinctly, but it says three times that it's his mother's brother. There seems to be a connection here to the mother, you know, to Rivka. Right. Okay. Anybody?
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he was just remembering what happened with Eliezer and Rivka, and how fortuitous it was that, you know, that Eliezer met Rivka right away at the well, and so maybe when he met Rachel, he was like overjoyed that. He felt that she was destined to be for him,
right,
and he was happy about that and kissed her.
Okay, and so this cry was not necessarily a cry of relief or something like that, but it was a cry of joy.
No.
It was a cry of joy.
No, you said the kiss, not the cry.
I understand, but then vayefk, and then the cry, therefore, is a cry of joy. If you're saying he was so happy that he, so then it's a, you know, then it's a cry of joy. Okay.
Right. If you don't look at
if what?
What?
If what?
I said if you don't look at Rashi.
Right. If you don't look at, I'm just looking at the pasuk right now. How do you see the pasuk? Anybody else have a take on this pasuk? Okay. So let's take a. I'd like to take a look now at some of the mefarshim. I'll share my screen with you. Share screen. Again, first we're going to take a look at an exegetical approach. We'll see what some of the mefarshim say, and then we'll take a look at more of a more literary approach, so looking at it as a part of an overall theme. Okay, so Rashi is our first go-to, and Rashi says. Rashi comments over here, not on the vayishak, not on the kissing, but on the crying. Let's just take a look at Rashi here for a second. Yeah. So Rashi says, can put this. Okay. All right. We'll take a look at it in the English. Rashi says, because he foresaw by Hashem, by Nevuah, that she would not be buried with him in the cave of Machpelah. Right? So he cried because he had this Nevuah in the future that, even though this was apparently his soulmate, they would not be with each other forever. They would not be buried together. Apparently that generated the crying. Another explanation is he wept because he came with empty hands. He thought, Eliezer, my grandfather's servant, had with him rings and bracelets and all good things. Well, I have nothing with me. So he cried because he came in such poverty to this situation where, you know, he should have been able to provide something for this bride-to-be, and he basically is coming empty-handed, and he's sort of crying about his sorry circumstance. And then Rashi explains, based on the Medrash, that this was because Eliphaz's son had pursued Yaakov by Esav's, his father's order, to kill him. And then he caught up to him. And then Eliphaz, you know, was sort of talking this out with his uncle Yaakov. He's like, you know, my father told me to kill you. What am I supposed to do? And Yaakov puts him on his lap and says, son, I'm going to help you out here. So he gives him all of his financial wealth, all of his property. And he says, okay, now that I'm a poor person, you know, ani chashuv kemes, you can technically, if not entirely honestly, tell your father that you caused me death, right? And a poor person is considered like a dead person. Okay, so that's what Rashi says. But Rashi cites a medrash, and that's only two out of the three versions, explanations in the medrash. There is a third explanation in the medrash, which I will bring up for you in a moment here. Where is it? Whoops. Okay. So the medrash says the following. And I guess we only have it, well, do we have this in English? No, we only have this in the Hebrew. So Yaakov comes, where is it? Oh, wait a minute. Where is the Medrash? Try over here. Okay, I don't see the Medrash in front of me just this second, but there's a third view of the Medrash. And the third view of the Medrash is that that Yaakov was crying because he was very upset. He was upset that people had seen him kiss Rachel, and they thought to themselves, wow, what a real... you know, low life this guy is. He's acting in such a licentious way, and since he's acting in such a licentious way, you know, he's a, you know, they were spreading rumors about him. So the Medrash, which this part of the Medrash Rashi does not quote, but this Medrash says that the reason that he was crying was because Vayishaklo, he kissed her, and people saw that as somehow a lewd or inappropriate thing. So the Medrash, while the Medrash doesn't precisely in this context explain the kiss, but the Medrash is clearly taking the view that the kiss, it was not a you know, was not a lewd or a sexual or romantic type of kiss. Okay, now that and that's in the context of explaining why Yaakov was crying. Okay, so that's sort of one take on this. The Medrash walks it back and says that he was crying for any of a variety of these reasons. But one thing is absolutely clear is that this was not a romantic kiss. Let's take a look, if you would, with me, the Sforno. The Sforno says something interesting. He says that he cried. He was pained that he did not merit marrying her earlier in his youth, so that by now he would have grown up, they would have had grown children. In other words, he was crying because of the lost opportunity. And so he was crying because of this lost opportunity, and you know, they could have had this all these years earlier. I sometimes kid around with my wife. We had been seeing each other for quite a while before we ultimately got engaged, and we had been an item some years earlier, and then there was a break for a few years, and then we reconnected and ultimately got engaged and married. So I sometimes kid around with her and I say, you know, it's if we would have gotten married, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier, I would be younger, I'd have more patience with the children, I would, you know. So Sforno is saying that he cries over here because of the lost opportunity. But that doesn't that doesn't inform the Vayishak L'Rachel. He kisses her, and he cries because of the lost opportunity. And maybe, although it's not necessarily so, that the Sforno would say that this was a romantic kiss. He kissed her, he realized this was the one, and now he cries because he realizes, you know, that what a terrible thing that this couldn't have happened years earlier. So while this doesn't necessarily demand that Yaakov gave her a romantic kiss, it does certainly open the possibility that was the case. Now, V'ksav Kabbalah, which I will share with you in a moment here. Okay. V'ksav Kabbalah of Mecklenburg writes the following. He's a real fascinating Peirush, V'ksav Kabbalah. He says, no way was this a romantic kiss. How do you know it wasn't a romantic kiss? He says, Nishika, does everybody see my screen properly? You're following? Yes? This is okay? All right. Nishika im lamid biyad o bekatef o betzavar. The pasuk says, Vayishak lirachel. And he argues that if you look through the biblical text, whenever you have Nishika li, that's different than l'nishika et. So Vayishak et Rachel would mean he kissed Rachel. Like he gave her a romantic kiss. But Nishika with a lamid, Vayishak li Rachel, he says, anytime you have Vayishak with a lamid, Nishika with a lamid, that's, you know, a formal sort of greeting. It's the old handshake. It's the French or the Arab kiss, you know, where you're not kissing the person. It's a greeting. They kiss the cheeks on either side, or maybe it's a kiss on the, on the top of the hand. You know, it's that kind of kiss, or even a kiss on the neck, which is not a romantic kiss. Al pi minhag hamedinos, according to the social norms of the place in which you live. So not all kisses are equal, right? A kiss is not just a kiss. A kiss can be a romantic kiss. A kiss can be a compassionate kiss. A kiss can be just a formality, a greeting. Ubelo lamid, but if you have the kiss without the lamid, hi bapeh, then that is that's lip to lips. Right? Not a kiss on the forehead or a kiss on the hand, you know, or anything like that. Uvelo lamid hibapeh. That's a kiss on the mouth. A kiss on the lips. And he cites here the Ibn Ezra. And I've seen this Ibn Ezra quoted in other Mefarshim. I looked up the Ibn Ezra. I didn't see it. Maybe it's on a different pasuk somewhere, but I didn't see it on this pasuk. Nevertheless, that's what he argues in the name of the Ibn Ezra. Rabbo Seinu Amar Baraba. And one second. Actually, before I give you the next piece, share with you another view here, which is Rabbeinu Bachya. And Rabbeinu Bachya says, we have it here in the English. Let's go right here. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, the reason the Torah referred to Rachel as Kitana, as small, is that she was still a minor and Yaakov could not consummate marriage vows with her. This was the reason that Lavan was not worried to hand his flocks to her instead of his already adult daughter Leah, who was liable to be molested by the male shepherds on account of her age. We should also note that Yaakov did not kiss Rachel on the mouth, but on the head or on the shoulders, suggesting that there was no sexual element in the kiss. Again, he also cites the Ibn Ezra. So there's this like resistance over here to assuming that this was some type of romantic kiss. Now, Rabbeinu Bachya says that this would make sense in accordance with the fact that of the Midrash that says that she was a young girl at the time, right? So you don't give a romantic kiss to a young girl. But be it as it may, whether it was a, you know, kiss on the forehead or a French kiss, when the French kiss each other to you know, as a formality, like the Arabs do. You know, whatever it is, this was not a romantic kiss. Everybody seems to be, to be walking that piece of it back. Now, I'm going back to the Ksava Kabbalah of Sites of Medrash, which says the following, right over here. Rabboseinu Amru, in the Medrash Rabbah, Kol Neshika Letiflus, all kissing, which is for silliness, meaning for pleasure, for some type of sexual kissing, all kisses are, Kol Neshika Letiflus. All kisses have, Tiflus can either mean silly or foolish, or he says over here, pritzos, which is some type of there's a sexual component to it. Bar min thus, except for three kisses. And what are they? Neshika shel gedula, a neshika shel prakim, or neshika shel prishus. So neshika shel ritanchuma omer af neshika shel krivos, even a familial kiss. So what are these three or four kisses? Gedula, prakim, prishus, and krivos. So what are these all? So gedula is when somebody is given a kiss at a time when they are endowed with some type of significant status, and the Medrash cites the situation where David, I think, is crowned, and there is a kiss. So in other words, this is a neshika, which is not about there's no sexual element to it. It is simply part of a grand ceremony. Neshika shel prakim, when you don't see somebody for a long time and then you see them again, you see them from time to time, like a greeting. So that's what we said earlier. Uneshika shel prishus, and when you leave a person, so then there's also that type of formal type of kiss. And Rabbi Tanchuma adds, af neshika shel krevos. Even the kiss of a kiss of relatives. And what is his source for that? Or what is the proof text? Shenemar vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. That Yaakov kissed Rachel. Kisiba saneshika hi l'rov ahava v'cheshek haboer balev. That most often kissing is a reflection of some type of love or a burning desire in a person's heart. Lehitchaber yachad ad shesif sosav mishikos ish el achihu, until one's lips are touching one another. So milva. So in other words, it sounds like he's saying that most kisses have this like sort of burning desire that is fueling them. Except for these, which includes the kiss of Yaakov to Rachel, ki nafsho oheves es nefesh re'ehu miderech elo ashloshim shetisar hanefesh lidabekim re'ehu. Let me just skip down over here, right over here. Uli Rabbi Tanchuma gam bein hakrovim, and Rabbi Tanchuma says even when it's family members kissing one another, shenafshosam mitzad shenafshosam misachdos. This is about creating some type of unity, some type of like a connection of familiarity and a connection of it's a family connection. You feel like one. They're at one with one another. V'zehai seneshikas Yaakov, and this was the kiss of Yaakov to Rachel. Lo mipnei davar acher, not because of some type of sexual, desire, but rather, as we said, v'nei tanik, and just skipping down to the end over here, he writes, v'ta'am vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, the reason that Yaakov kissed Rachel, shehitchaber ima b'machshavto uritzono. They were unified in mind, in heart, and soul. They were kindred spirits. That's what this type of kiss was, a kiss of kindred spirits. Okay, so these mefarshim, for the most part, are attempting to walk back what seems to be the pshat, and that is that this was not, for one reason or another, this was not a type of romantic kiss, but it was some type of other kiss. I would like to share with you now the either it was a kiss of formality, or is a kiss of kindred spirits, or it was a kiss that simply I would say kissing a kid on the forehead if you assume that she was a 3-year-old kid, that type of kiss. Okay. Rabbi Yonatan Cohen, who is associated with Yeshivat Sha'alvim for women, I saw in a short essay that he wrote, suggests something which I think is brilliant. I think it makes a lot of sense. He says, this was a romantic kiss, and it was not a romantic kiss all at the same time. How could that be possible? It either is or is not. You can't be half pregnant, right? You either are pregnant or you're not. So what does it mean that when I say... So let's look at the pasuk carefully. I'd like you to go back with me to pasuk 8, 9, 10 over here. So he's talking to the shepherds, and he says to them, what are you doing here? This is the middle of the day. This is not a day for watering your sheep. And they say to him, well, we can't go out to the, we can't take a quick swig at the well, because we need a lot of shepherds to help us take it off. So he says, V'yomer lo nuchal, v'galu es ha'even, v'hishkinu es ha'tzon. We will, when everybody gets here, then we will water the sheep. Od midaber imam. He's talking with them. And, 1 second. Give me 1 second. Let's go back. I'm sorry. We're going to go back to pasuk 3. So you have the shepherds. They're all gathered. V'galu es ha'even, and the stone would be rolled from the mouth of the well, and the sheep would be watered, and then the stone would be put back in its place on the mouth of the well. And what's the word here for watering the sheep? V'hashku es ha'tzon. That's how you say it. You water the sheep. Now, skipping to the pasuk that I told you a moment ago, pasuk 7, Vayomer, and he says, "Hein hayom gadol lo yaseh seif hamikna." This isn't a time for gathering by the well. Hashku atzatzon, give your sheep a little bit of water, ulchoru, and go off back to work. Again, this language, hashku atzatzon, water the sheep. Vayomru, and they respond, "We can't do that. It's too hard. It's too difficult to remove the stone." So when everybody arrives, v'hishkinu, third time, we will water the sheep. This word, v'hishkinu. Pasuk 9, Odenu medaber, he's talking with them, and as he's talking with them, Rachel shows up. Pasuk 10, he sees Rachel, v'yigash Yaakov, and Yaakov approaches, v'yashk et tzon Lavan, he gives water to the sheep of Lavan, v'yashk et tzon Lavan. And then it says, Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. And then he kisses Rachel. So Rabbi Cohen says that this Vayishak should not be understood as that he kissed her. It should be understood that he gave her water. Now it says Vayishak, not Vayashk. So why would he think that this means that he gave her water? Well, look at the next pasuk. When Yaakov meets Lavan, Vayehi kishmoa Lavan es shema Yaakov. Lavan hears that Yaakov is there. He runs to Yaakov to greet him. Vayichabek lo, and he embraces him. Vayinashek lo, vayishak lo. It says vayinashek lo.
Different poel.
A different poel. So, but they're two psukim apart from one another. You know, the pasuk could have said, "Vayinashek Yaakov l'Rachel." That would have been without any, there would have been no ambiguity about that. But the fact that the Torah chooses to use this word "Vayishak," which is very similar to this word "Vayashk," which has been used in multiple psukim up until now about watering the sheep, and even in the previous pasuk it says, "Vayashk etzon Lavan." He gives the water of the water to Lavan's sheep, to Rachel's sheep. By Yishak Yaakov L'Rachel. So he says it means that he gave this gift of water to Rachel and to her, and I guess to her sheep as well, but with the emotional framework that he's in, He gave it to her as if it were a kiss. Right? A kiss doesn't always have to be a physical kiss. Right? You can give somebody a Hershey's chocolate kiss. They sell them as kisses, you know, to give out on Valentine's Day. Right? You give them a kiss. Right? Isn't there some... So isn't that Peter Pan? You know, he gives a kiss, right? So that's what he argues. And I think it's brilliant. And I think it's a beautiful thought. He's giving her this gift. But this is not just he's giving her some water. This gift is coming with great emotional heft to it. With even maybe even romantic heft. And when she gets that water, it's as though he planted a kiss on her without ever touching her. It could be romantic and beautiful and inspirational and all of those beautiful things. And he didn't even, but there was no physicality. He gave her the water, vayashk, but it was like a kiss, vayishak. So I find this Rabbi Cohen's view actually very, very compelling. But as I said, the standard view of the classical Mefarshim is that he kissed her, but it wasn't any type of romantic kiss, and you shouldn't think that. I would like to now take you on a brief journey over the next 15 or 20 minutes maximum. Hopefully, and share with you a thought which the basis of this is by Rabbi Amnon Bazak, but I think I'm saying it a little differently, so I don't want to credit him wrongly if he disagrees with what I'm saying. But the essence of this I got from Rabbi Amnon Bazak. Let's go back to our story to the beginning of our story here. And the beginning of our story begins. Where is the beginning of this story? What is the opening of the story? What?
Vayetze.
Well, no. What's the beginning of the story where he meets about his journey to meet Rachel? This is Vayisa Yaakov Raglav, Vayelach Artza Bnei Kedem. He picks up his feet and he goes eastward to, and then he goes to the well. But if you want to take it back a little further, so then you could say Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva, that Yaakov went out from Beersheva to begin his journey, and then he has the dream in the middle of the road. But Barbara, if you're going to go back that far, why don't you go back really to the beginning of the story? What's the beginning of the story?
Looking told us.
So, folks, really, what's the beginning of this story? Well, I would go back a few psukim before that. It's when Yitzchak tells Yaakov to leave and to go find a wife. So let's look at that pasuk because I think it's important. This is in chapter 28. Pasuk 1. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, Vayivarecho. So Yitzchak calls Yaakov and he blesses him. Vayitzaveyu, and he commands him, saying, Lo tikach isha mibnos Kanaan. You better not marry a woman from the land of Kanaan. Kum lech padena aram. Go to padena aram. Go to the house of Betuel. And there you should take a wife from the bnos Lavan. Bnos Lavan achi imecha. Lavan, the brother of your mother. Okay, but one thing you shouldn't do is take a woman from where?
Canaan.
And specifically, which kind of Canaanites? I mean, Canaanites in general are no good, but specifically, which type of Canaanites? Let's read a few psukim back to really the beginning of this story. Not 28:1.
Chiti?
What?
From the Chiti?
Yeah. What does Rivka tell? Rivka is the one who concocts this plan, who comes up with this idea, right? What does she tell Yitzchak? Pasuk 46, last pasuk in the parak 27. Batomer Rivka al Yitzchak katzti b'chayai mipnei b'nos cheit. Right? I've had it up to here. I can't take it. The b'nos cheit. Imokeach Yaakov Yisham b'nos cheit ka'ela b'nos ha'aretz lama lichayim. If he marries a daughter of cheit, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I think I once saw Lahavdil Ellis Alve Havdalos. I think I once saw Mel Brooks on I think it was Johnny Carson, and who was Mel Brooks married to? I forgot who. But she wasn't she wasn't a Beis Yaakov girl, so at least a second marriage. Right, so it was either Mel Brooks or Jackie Mason. I think it was Mel Brooks. Yeah. So Johnny Carson says to him, "So how'd your mother take it that you didn't marry in the faith?" So he said she took it fine. She said, "Oh, a very nice girl." And then she opened up the oven, turned on the stove and the fire, and stuck her head in the oven. You know, so I think that's a good way to dramatize the notion of katzti b'chayai, right? If she marries from benos chet, I have I don't want to live, right? So what's so bad about the daughters of Kana'an? What's so bad about the daughters of chet? I mean, are they any better than than the people in Padan Aram? They're all idol worshippers. So I don't remember where I saw this years ago, and it's not my own thought, but I definitely saw it somewhere else. And that is that there is a difference between the Lavan's house, which are all idol worshippers, and the Canaanites and the people of Chet. Idol worship is fine, right? It's not fine, but idol worship you can handle. Today you're an idol worshipper, I can educate you, and tomorrow you can become an Eved Hashem. The problem with the Kanani and the Chiti is that they had a immoral streak to them. They didn't have basic ethical morality, and that you can't learn so easily. That is that's an inherent quality that the Balei Musar say can take a whole lifetime just to change one little midah. So the problem of Benos Kanaan was that they didn't have proper morals, and how do you and that's what Rachel says. I don't care. Go to Lavan. Yes, I know they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They're also idol worshippers, but somebody who's an idol worshipper, you can educate them. Somebody who is morally corrupt and morally bankrupt, that's not so easy to educate. That's a lifetime of behaviors and character, and that's not so easy to change. It's not impossible, but that's a lot harder to address. So that was Rivka's real concern. She was really concerned. She was concerned about the immorality, about the lack of ethics and morals. And how do we know that the people of Chet are really so problematic? So let's go back even further. Where does this story of Kanaan and Chet really begin? Well, Kanaan really begins all the way at the beginning of Bereishis. But at least for our purposes, where do we learn about the Benos Chet? Or the people, or I shouldn't say the Benos Chet, about the people of Chet. Where?
Ephron Hachiti?
Yeah, Ephron Hachiti, right? So Ephron, let's go back to the story of Ephron, where Avram wants to buy the Maras HaMachpelah. So let's go back over here to the beginning of Chayei Sara. Okay, there we are. It's on your screen. Beginning of Chayei Sara. V'Avraham zaken baba yamim v'yomer l'avdo zkan beso. One second. That's not the beginning of Chayei Sara. Let's try that again. The beginning of Chayesara is post chapter 23. Aleph, Ayu Chayesara. There we go. Okay. Okay, everybody see it? So he gets up. Sarah dies. Vayakam Avraham me'al p'nei beiso. Vayidaber el b'nei chet. He speaks to the b'nei chet. And he says, Ger v'tosh amani emachem. I am a resident. I'm an alien. Right? I want to buy this achuzas kever. Vayanu b'nei chet es Avraham le'mor. And b'nei chet respond. Shmaino Adoni nesi elokim ata b'tochenu b'mimchar kvarenu. Kvar me'esecha. You can have the choicest of lots. I saw the Mefarshim say, what does it mean, b'mimchar kvarenu? Means you can have the best place in Potter's Field. B'mimchar kvarenu kvar me'esecha. Ish b'menu as kivro lo yichle b'mimcha mikvar me'esecha. Nobody's going to withhold burial place from you. That is if you want to be b'mivchar kvarenu. But he's not looking for Potter's Field, the best spot there. What he's looking for is Maras HaMachpelah. Vayakam Avraham v'edaber, and he says, listen, I want to speak to Ephron. V'yitei is Maras HaMachpelah. I want my own independent place. I don't want to just be part of some general burial spot. I want to have a special place. Maras HaMachpelah. So the Ephron, and now Ephron comes, and he says, "Lo adoni shma'enu, I give you the field, and I want to buy, and I'll give you the cave that it is in. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead." He said, "Hasada nasati lach v'hamara sherbo. I'm giving you the whole thing." Vaydaber el Ephron, and Avram says to him, "Imata lu shma'eni, I want to pay for it." So a person of high character and high integrity, Ephron would say, no, my word is my word. My word is my bond. I said, take it. You'll take it. You want to pay for it? I'll tell you what. You put it into tzedakah. You want to do that? Put it into tzedakah. Right? I remember the beginning of Corona, when the streets were literally empty. So I went on Friday to Pomegranate to go buy challahs for Shabbos. Hadn't been there in a while, hadn't gone out in a while, but decided to go out. And it was like nobody was out. There were five people in the store. So I go and as I'm online, I met somebody from shul, and we're schmoozing. And I'm online, and the cashier is ringing me up, and I put my hand in my pocket. And I realized I walked out of the house without a wallet. So it happened to be that this fellow from shul was on the other register. So I said to him, can I borrow a couple of bucks? I need your credit card. I don't have a... So he said, Rabbi, no problem. So I said, okay, it was whatever it was, $15, I'll pay you back. No, this is my mitzvah. But I felt bad. I didn't want the guy to think that I was, I didn't want him to think less of me. But he wasn't going to accept my money. So I went home and I made a donation, whatever the amount was. I made a donation to some charity in Israel. And I took a screenshot of it and I emailed it to him. He said, because he said, you want to do something? Give it to tzedakah. So I wanted to show him that I actually gave it to tzedakah. So Ephron, well, he told Ephron, listen, I'm going to pay for it. Now, if Ephron were a man of high integrity, he would have said, fine, my word is my bond. But if you want to pay for it, go give it to tzedakah. Do something with it, but I'm not taking your money. And as we all know, what does Ephron actually say? He says, Arba meos kesef shekel kesef beinu beinecha mahi. He says, well, a piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, that's not, what's that between you and me? Beini uveincha mahi. Vesmeischa kvor. Go ahead and bury your dead. And Avraham hears this from Ephron. He gives him the money. He says, Daber el beaznei bnei chet. Tell all the people of chet. Arba meo shekel kesef over la socher. 400 shekels of good currency. They just found in Israel these ancient counterfeit silver. And so he says, I want everybody to know this is 400 shekels of silver that over la socher. This is good currency, and because apparently, he wouldn't be believed by the Bnei Chet, and he didn't want there to be any possibility of people saying anything other than what was absolutely true. Apparently, the Bnei Chet were not people that, if you did a deal, that other people wouldn't talk about it and undermine it. Vayakam stay Ephron. Ephron gets up. And, the field of Ephron changes ownership. Okay, so that's the story that we all know about Chet and about Ephron. So, you know, they start up. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, but Lavan and Betuel were very immoral.
Okay, good.
As well.
Very good. So in that context, that Avraham tells, that Yitzchak tells Yaakov to go to to his family with the idea that he's going to find people of moral standing and good character there, even if they're idol worshippers. So now let's fast forward and see how that all works out. So now let's go back to Toldos. So he shows up.
Vayetze?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Vayetze. Nope. Okay. So here we are back at Vayetze. He shows up. And let's walk through this story together again. He comes to the well, and Hinesham Shlosha Adrei Tzoner of Tzimaleh. There are three flocks of sheep with their shepherds. Nobody talks to him, apparently. Venesvu Shama Kol Adarim Vayomer Lahem. So Yaakov is the one who decides to open up conversation. He's the new guy. They're standing there. Nobody talks to him. Right? It's like you show up to a new shul, and you walk to shul, and nobody says anything, except for you're sitting in my seat. Right? Vayomer lahem Yaakov. So Yaakov says, Achai, my brothers, me'ayin atem, where are you from? And they give him a really long-winded answer. Mecharan anachnu. That's, he wasn't asking them where you're from. He's opening up a conversation. And they answered him as though he was asking them a question, Vayomer lahem, and then they're quiet. Right? So Vayomer lahem, he tries again. Hayidatem es Lavan ben Nachor. Hey, you're from Haran. You know, Lavan ben Nachor, play a little Jewish geography, even though nobody's Jewish at the time. And you know what they respond? Yadanu, yeah, we know him. Okay, this is like a real talkative group here, a real friendly group, right? This is the stranger showing up to the well, and they they're the locals. Vayomer lahem, he tries a third time. Hayidatem es Lavan ben Nachor? Do you know Lavan? So they said, do you know Lavan ben Nachor? And you know what they say? Yeah, we know. Yadanu. Dead silence. Vayomer lahem, and he says, Hashalom lo, so can you tell me how he's doing? Anything about him? And here they actually say something. They basically say, stop talking to us. But they say it a little nicer than that. Vayomer shalom, they say, yeah, he's doing fine. And if you want to find out about him, his daughter is going to be showing up in a few minutes. You can talk to her. So this is Yaakov's introduction to this place where he's supposed to be able to find a woman of good character. And these don't seem to be nice people. They seem to be the opposite of nice people. So now Rachel shows up. He's talking with them. not only they're not nice, they don't seem to be people of particularly good character. Give your sheep water. Go work. What are you hanging out? Lazy people here in the middle of the day. It's a work day. And they say, "Lo nuchal asher esu kol adarim v'ishkinu hatzon." He says, "No, we're actually not lazy, but we need everybody to gather, and then we can water our sheep." But it doesn't really explain it. You know, this is not the time for watering sheep. Watering sheep is in the afternoon. So these don't seem to be people of, you know, these are not, you know, Balabatisha crowd. You know, these aren't, really strong people of character. So he's talking with them. V'rachel ba'i matzom avia ki ro'ahi. So she shows up. Vayhi kasher ra'ah Yaakov es Rachel. And when Yaakov sees her, he sees Rachel bas Lavan achi imo. He sees her, the daughter of Lavan, brother of his mother. In other words, he sees something that resembles family, his mother. Vestzon Lavan achi imo, and it's the sheep of Lavan, his mother's brother. Igash Yaakov, and Yaakov steps forward, he removes the thing. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, vayisas kolo vayefk. So he sees in her the daughter of his mother's brother. He sees a similarity here. Question is the similarity skin deep, or is the similarity deeper than that? Are these people that he is this woman somebody who is like as good character as the people that he's just met, or not? So, Vayishak Yaakov Rachel. So at first glance he thinks, ah, his quest is fulfilled. His father sent him on a journey. Vayishak l'Rachel, he kisses her. Maybe like we saw I think it was the Ksav Kabbalah says, kindred spirits. It doesn't necessarily have to be a romantic kiss. He met somebody who is like him, who's like his mother. It's like they're kindred spirits, and they're going to, you know, this is going to be the woman. They're going to build a family together, God willing. Vayisas kolo vayefk, and he raises his voice and he cries. It's a cry, maybe of joy, that a cry that, you know, he was under a lot of stress. You know, he runs away from his brother. His father sends him on this mission. He stops in the middle of the road. You know, he doesn't know how things are going to go, right? When he had the dream, you know, he says, "God, if you protect me on my way," he's in a foreign territory here. So the neshika here can be a kiss of unified, of kindred spirits. Maybe it is a romantic kiss, but I think it makes more sense that the kiss is not a romantic kiss because he didn't even talk to her yet. It's only afterwards he says, "Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel." Yaakov says to Rachel, "Guess who I am?" So when he kissed her, it could have been like a chivalrous kiss on the hand or on the forehead, right? Like the Ibn Ezra says, "Vayishak le" means like a more formal kiss. So the pshat that it was to say that the rabbis were just prudes and they didn't want to read the pasuk as is, actually, I think makes a little bit of sense that they weren't prudes. But it organically flows from the storyline. It was not necessarily a romantic kiss. Nothing wrong with a romantic kiss. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it doesn't make sense. It would make more sense. He didn't even say a word to her. That the kiss that he gave her was one of, you know, a more, you know, the chivalrous kiss, the greeting, the, you know, that type of kiss. So,
Rabbi?
One second. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel. Rachel says to her, Yaakov says to Rachel, he introduces himself. He says, "I am Rivka's son." Now, we see some parallels now between Rivka and Rachel. They both meet at a well. As Barbara pointed out earlier, Eliezer met Rivka at the well, and here he's meeting Rachel at the well. That's a good sign. Rivka runs to tell her family. Rachel does the same thing. So it's like, we see some parallels here. Lavan comes and he greets her and he greets him and he kisses him, and he says, "Come, you know, you'll stay with me." So all of these things are portend well for a parallel between Rivka and Rachel. Rachel is coming from a good, Rachel does share the same values, even if she might be from a house of Avodah Zarah. But here while the similarities are true, the similarities only more point out the differences. So what are some of the differences that give Yaakov pause? And the reason that I want to point these out is I skipped one step here, and that is that so he goes ahead and he marries her. Why doesn't he take her home at the first possible opportunity? Why does he take her home at the first possible? So he could have taken her home just now, but Lavan says, you know, I'll work for her, you know, for 7 years, right? And then he has to work for another 7 years. But even after all that time is done, he doesn't take her home immediately. He stays with Lavan for a little bit longer, and he only takes her home after Yosef is born. And I think that what I want to point out here is that in as much as Yaakov is on a journey, he's concerned about the woman who he's going to take home. Does she meet the criteria of being a person of good morals? Now, he thinks so, but there are reasons to be skeptical. So, for example, Rivka ran home to her mother. Rachel runs home to tell her father. Now, Yaakov might not have known right now that Lavan was a duplicitous guy, But he does find that out. And the fact that she runs home to her father, and the Torah tells us that, is maybe indicating that Yaakov was concerned that she was influenced, that her main influence was her father, who was not a good guy. Furthermore, you know, Rivka at the well offers, she shows up at the well and she offers, or she does a great chesed for Eliezer, right? Now it's true that Eliezer, I think, does ask. What does Eliezer say? Going back to
Hagmi'in, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the pasuk again. Going back to 1 second. Whoops. Okay. Where's the pasuk? Okay, but we all know the. 1 second. Where is it? Okay, we all know the psukim. Here it is. Eliezer shows up. And the Ne Rivka Yotzas, same thing, you know, the same similar story. She comes out, Va'omar Eleha, and he says, and you know, I said to her, Hashkini na. That's not the pasuk. Yeah. V'hinei Rivka yotzeis chadol shikma v'omar ileha ishkinina v'atimaher v'atorid v'atomer shtei v'gam nalecha ishke. So it's true that he does say
ad mi'inina ma'at mai mikadech.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. He says hagminina mai mikadech. All right. Pasuk 17. Okay, sorry for that. That I got a little fixated on that pasuk. Nevertheless, the point is that where Rivka did a great chesed for Eliezer at the well, Rachel does nothing similar. She runs to her father, who's not a good guy, and Rivka ran to her mother. And it can even sort of, some want to suggest that, you know, it was like more tznius stick for him to run to her mother than running to her father. But okay. But having said that, the fact of the matter is that Lavan seems to be a significant influence on Rachel. But there is further distinctions between Rivka and Rachel. So let's skip a little forward. They get married, right? And Pasuk 17, Rachel is described as Yifas Torah v'Yifas Mareh. Rivka is also described that way. So, you know, it could very well be that either she is like Rivka, or maybe it's just skin deep like Rivka. But let's skip now to they get married, and they're trying to have children. And Rachel is having problems. And Vatera Rachel ki lo yalda li Yaakov v'takaneva Rachel b'achosa. Rachel is not having children, and she's jealous of her sister. Vatomer al Yaakov, and she says to Yaakov, Hava li banim v'imayin mesa anochi. Give me children, if not, I will die. So, you know, when Rivka's having trouble, you know, with her pregnancy, right? So she, you know, calls out to Hashem. Furthermore, when Rivka's having trouble, so, you know, Yitzchak prays for her, and the Medrash says she's on one side, he's on the other side. But here you have Rachel, you know, she's facing a challenging situation, and she, like, demands of her husband, Havali banim vin ayim anochi mesa. I don't want to judge her, because when a person is under stress and duress and great anxiety, people act in all types of ways. But to the extent that the Torah creates these parallel structures over here for us to notice similarities and differences between Rivka and Rachel, it's worth pointing out that she takes a much more accusatory position with Yitzchak, with Yaakov, than Rivka ever did with Yitzchak. Now Yaakov gets upset. He says, "Atachas Elokim ani, wrong address. You should be talking to Hashem, not to me." Now she says to him, "Hine amasi Bilha boe leha. Here is my maidservant Bilha. You convert with her. Va'tele al birkai va'ibaneh gam anochim mimena, and I will build a house from her." So even this reminds us of when Sarah was having difficulty and she gave Hagar to Avraham. She talks in much more dulcet tones to Avraham. She says, you know, Yukachna, please take my maidservant or my as a pilagesh. She says, Ulai ibane mimena, maybe we'll succeed and I will have a children through the in this way. Rachel is much, much more harsh. So all this is giving Yaakov pause about who Rachel is. Is Rachel the person who's influenced by these, you know, not nice people at the well, people like Lavan? Is she like Bnei Chet, or is she like the broad family of Avraham? But Tomer Rachel now has another scheme up her sleeve. And Rachel says to Leah, she says, you know what, give me the Dudaim. Remember the story where Leah has these aphrodisiac flowers, and Rachel wants them for herself. So Pasuk says, Vayavo Yaakov min hasadeh, vateitze Leah likrato, ki sachor schartiha bedudae bini. Leah bought the right to be with Yaakov by selling by giving the dudaim to Rachel. In other words, Rachel, when you know demanding from Yaakov didn't work, then she goes and tries these aphrodisiac flowers. That doesn't work. That doesn't work either. Ultimately, by Yizkor Elohim es Rachel, God does remember Rachel. By Shmai Leha Elohim, and God hears her. So apparently, she ultimately does direct herself to Hashem. And she realizes with humility that God has removed her shame, quote unquote shame. Yosef, and she calls him Yosef, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. So she realizes ultimately that she has, this is her relationship between herself and Hashem. And when Yaakov sees that, Then, Vayihi kasher yalda Rachel es Yosef, Vayomer Yaakov el Lavan shalcheni ve'elchal mekomi el Eretzi. Now he realized it's time for him to go home, that Rachel is indeed a person of good character. He didn't make a mistake. That when he kissed her, and he thought that they were kindred spirits, he was right. She was the daughter of Lavan, the sister of Rivka. Not just the daughter of Lavan, the daughter of Lavan, the sister of Rivka. When Yitzchak commanded that they go home and they that he go get a wife from not from Benos Kanan, not from Bnei Chet, that was a charge of a type of person he was looking for. And this story about Yitzchak, about Yaakov's kiss, is not just about whether it was a romantic kiss or not, but the kiss symbolized what he thought and ultimately was correct, that they were kindred spirits. They were one, the same values. And ultimately, that's what was important. And ultimately, that's what he was unsure about and what he ultimately had confirmed. And then once it was confirmed, he was able to go home. Vayishak l'Rachel, he kisses Rachel. Vayefk, and he cries. I think it's a great relief that he has been able to meet the goals that his father had challenged him to do. And in doing so, and if we can now take it to a broader level, in doing so, he realized that he would be able not just to meet his father's wishes of finding a nice girl, but in doing so to take his rightful place as one of the progenitors of the Klal Yisrael, as the third of the three Avos, to take his national position. Because with Rachel, with Leah, and now with Rachel, he was fully equipped to do what needed to be done to bring about the fruition of the dream of the Shvatim, and to pass on the values and the legacy of Avraham and Yitzchak before him. And so, to the question, is a kiss just a kiss, or is it not? In this case, I would say a kiss was just a kiss, but it also was something else. And that's it for today. Any comments or thoughts?
No? Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Why does it say Vayisa et Kol?